And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Trent. Hi, Trent.
Hey, Leslie. Good morning. You know, wow, what a week it's been for storm snow here in Utah. We've just been slammed day after day with new snow, and the skiing has just been remarkable. I guess I should say the skiing and the riding have been really remarkable. Riding in any of the ski areas has been five stars, as well as the backcountry. However, you know, today the winds are just being the spoiler. The strong southerly winds are just ripping across the upper elevation ridgelines, and it's causing wind loading issues. So all the snow is getting, you know, grabbed from one side of the mountain and dumped onto the other. And then that wind loading also, you know, adds insult to injury to our persistent weak layer problems, which is that old weak snow that is still just plaguing the Wasatch Mountain. So we have kind of two issues going on today. One is just those wind slabs off the ridgelines, but then the more concerning avalanche problem is triggering a larger and more dangerous avalanche off of those ridgelines. Still plenty of great riding. If you want to get out in the mountains, you know, just stick to low angle slopes with nothing steep or adjacent to you. There's plenty of really soft snow left, especially out of that wind zone. If you're going to head out to the Uintas on a snowmobile, I think the advisory is just the same as it is for Salt Lake. Craig Gordon out there has got a considerable danger across the upper elevations, as well as the Salt Lake City and Park City ridgeline. Also is at a considerable hazard for today. As always, if you are heading into the backcountry, visit UtahAvalancheCenter.org.
Trent, hey, thank you. It's 8:16. Well, with less than 2 weeks before the end of this year's legislative session, things will start to move fast. On the phone with an update, the managing editor of UtahPolicy.com, Brian Schott. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
And we should note that Brian and I, we worked together many, many years ago when we were sister stations with KCPW, public radio in Salt Lake City. So Brian knows all about these pledge drives, and I guess you're probably grateful you don't have to do that anymore. But anyway, since we last talked, we had heard the latest figures of the budget surplus, upwards of $500 million. Where did all the money come from?
Tax collections are up. You know, it's $581 million extra dollars that lawmakers will have to spend this year. That's not including the approximately $80 million they're also going to get as a windfall from the federal tax reform. Now, there's talk about taking some of that money and doing an income tax cut, a very modest income tax cut of maybe 0.05%. Right now, the state's income tax rate is at 5%. They're going to drop that to 4.95% is what we're hearing. So you're not really going to notice much, but it's going to even things out in the long run. But lawmakers have a lot of extra money. The economy's booming. Things are going great. This is as good as it's been since right before the Great Recession in 2008. So lawmakers are a little bit freaked out by these numbers.
Given that, I mean, why not just put the money into education? I mean, we've got, of course, you know, our schools now fighting for more money. If they've got it, why not spend it?
Well, they not only have to do education, they have to figure out what they're going to do for state employees. They're looking at what are they going to do with state buildings. You know, as they've been telling me, you know, there's a few big rock things, the education budget, what they're going to do for state employees, corrections, things like that. Once those big rocks are in place, then they put the little rocks around them. And the big fights are going to be about those little rocks. You know, you'll see some of the biggest fights over things that only cost $100 or $200,000.
So $500, though, of a tax cut. I mean, is anyone even going to feel that?
Probably not.
So is it just because it's an election year and it's like, well, we cut your taxes? Is that what this is all about?
Well, that's part of it. But also, if the lawmakers don't do anything, because there was a change on the federal level, the way that your taxes are calculated, the state didn't make those changes here. So on the federal level, your taxable income has gone up. your state taxes are calculated on how much your taxable income is. If that goes up on the federal level, it goes up on the state level as well. So the state is bringing in more money, and unless they do something, they're going to start seeing that windfall every year, and they don't like that very much. So even if it's an extremely small tax cut, they'll be able to say, we were able to push through a tax cut.
Yeah, and I think you had done a poll, though, that shows that most Utahns would like that money spent on other state needs.
So we asked specifically about the $80 million in windfall, and about 37% of Utahns said that they would like to see that money go back into public education. Only 33% said a tax cut. So that's kind of what they're going to do. We're hearing about $55 million that will go into a tax cut, and then probably the remaining $25, $30 million or so will go towards education somehow. Education is going to get a boost this year. I don't know how much they're going to get. It's not going to be anywhere near what our schools now is promising to bring in with the income and sales tax hike that would bring in $700 million annually.
Hmm. Well, with the horror in Parkland, Florida, pressure across the country to see some sort of gun reform. The only piece of legislation locally I've heard about is a bill that would allow school districts to purchase some kind of deadbolt locking mechanism for classroom doors, but nothing about guns themselves?
Well, the locking door bill from Senator Todd Weiler was introduced before the session, and that's pretty much made it through the process. Legislative leaders are talking about ways to possibly do something about gun control. We've only got 9 working days left in the session, and tomorrow they're going to do something called sifting in the House. So all the bills that are up for debate on the big board, they're going to be taken off, and they're going to start prioritizing bills. Lawmakers are saying they want to do something. I don't think they have time. I really don't believe that they have time unless they decide that they're just going to jam something through in the last few minutes. And I still don't think they have time to get everybody on board and get the votes that they need. So there's a lot of talk about it, but I'm very skeptical.
Hmm. Okay, and let's talk briefly about House Resolution 4. There's a hearing on this at noon today, and as you mentioned, not a great time for anyone to attend to give input for or against. So what does this do?
Well, it's a rule change in the House only. This only affects the House. And buried in it, about the 4th item down, it's a restriction on members of the media. Right now, if you have a media pass, and you have to go through a background check to get one of these things, if you have a media pass, you can access the House and Senate floor before floor time. Lawmakers are sometimes out there sitting at their desk getting ready for the session, and you can ask them questions. What this would do is this would block members of the press from being on the House floor, in the hallways outside of the House chamber, or back in the House lounge for 45 minutes prior to a floor session. Representative Jim Dunnigan, who is sponsoring this, told me that lawmakers need a little extra time to collect themselves or get their papers ready, but they have offices. There's a lounge for the House. I'm not really understanding what this bill does. I actually plan to be there at the hearing and speak against it, because to me, this simply looks like a solution in search of a problem, and it just doesn't make any sense.
So do you feel personally targeted? I mean, is this about you? I hate to ask, but...
I don't know. I mean, there's only a few lawmakers, there's only a few members of the press who actually go down on the floor before the sessions on a consistent basis. There are a few members who say, I'll go out on the floor if someone's been trying to avoid me, if someone's been trying to stay away from me, and they will go out on the floor before that. But there's only a few people who really go out there on a consistent basis, and UtahPolicy.com is one of those. That's where we do a lot of our news gathering, where we go and ask people about their bills. What these lawmakers don't seem to understand is, you know, if they're hiding from us on the floor, and that's how I see this. I see this as them trying to hide from us, trying to stonewall us. It's not going to prevent us from writing our bills or our stories. We'll just write our stories without their comment or try to find them another way. So I'm not really sure what this is, where this crackdown on the press is coming from, but it clearly has the sign off of leadership in the House. Otherwise, it wouldn't be getting this far.
Right. And I guess I'm just trying to think, was there an incident where they, I mean, is it somehow retaliatory for something that had happened, or?
I haven't seen a single thing. Again, I see this is a solution in search of a problem. I'm not sure where this is coming from. There are a number of tricks going on with this. The hearing today at noon is with the House Rules Committee. So it's not it's a committee that usually doesn't take public testimony on bills. They're the ones who decide which bills go to which committee. They're putting this in the Rules Committee. They only do that on certain things. They did it with a public lands bill last year that really caused a lot of controversy. So this thing, it's got the smell of shenanigans all over it.
Okay, well, take your vitamins. We know it only gets busier from here on out.
Yep, Brian. 9 days, and then we're done at midnight on Thursday.
All right, thanks for your time, Brian. Well, the Park City Board of Education meeting tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock at the school district office. In the studio, I have Superintendent Amber Conley. Good morning.
Good morning.
So more timely than ever, I suppose, a security update will be presented. We're talking about what, identification badges required for students, staff, and visitors? When does this go into effect?
Right. So it's much more comprehensive than that. What we've done is work with Cole Smith from Tresset Consulting, and he has an amazing background in safety, worked for the Department of Defense for years. What he's done is come and look at different things, anywhere from an active drill, giving us feedback, critical assessment there, looking at our safety training, working on areas that we need to work on as far as front office vestibules as well as entries. So it's much more comprehensive than that. The ID badges did come up as a suggestion moving forward, just as far as safety, as well as making sure that everyone has an ID. Anyone coming into the building needs to have their ID so they can check in.
Yeah. The report in the staff packet puts a lot of emphasis on checking IDs against the sex offender database. So will this be for all of the schools, or are we just talking elementary? Or?
Right. So this has been an interesting just gathering knowledge. So there is requirements based on what we can and cannot check. And the sexual offenders, of course, is one of those that we can check rather easily. And so basically what it does is scans or puts in your ID, and if your name pops up and you're on the sex offenders registry, then it provides a red flag for us.
Okay. So is it just a simple software program?
It is. Yep.
Okay. Any problems with false positives?
So, you know, that hasn't been anything that he's brought forward, but it does, it brings in what we're looking at the community, because, you know, set aside the sex offender type person, but we want to make sure that we continue to be open and warm for those parents coming in, and knowing that we have the tension around immigration, it's something that we're trying to be very thoughtful around.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, with parents entering schools, how does that work with anybody who may be undocumented?
Well, it's something we're having to really look at very carefully. And we certainly don't have all the answers. And so, you know, working with the Latino outreach, getting information there, and again, making sure that we keep our kids safe, because that's really what we're looking at.
All right. In terms of background checks, what do we currently do now?
Well, we do all of our background checks for our employees, but as far as anyone coming into the building, we don't do any background checks.
No. But so any staff member would have a background
check
done?
Right, right. So it's required by the state of Utah that you're fingerprinted, and all of those come directly to the district prior to being allowed to be an employee of the district.
All right. Also, there's a lot of discussion about doors and using just one entrance for our elementary schools. So do you anticipate any need for some kind of metal detection?
I don't see any need for metal detection. I do think one of the biggest things that we can do is prevention. Of course, especially on the heels of the tragedy that occurred in Florida, which has just really rocked all of our worlds around safety. But, you know, looking at what we do already with and I want to do a shout out to our law enforcement here in town, working with Chief Carpenter and Sheriff Martinez. Anytime that we get any type of information that there could be a possible, you know, threat, they're calling me directly, which then puts our crisis team into place doing full investigation there. the law enforcement does house checks with any of those investigations, and we basically have those students, of course, parents involved, stay at home supervised until we've fully investigated any of those situations.
Yeah, so have we reached the point where we need to have some kind of armed police presence at each of our schools?
Well, you know, certainly it's been a discussion topic, and it will be brought forth to the board tomorrow. As we have done the remodel for the front office vestibules, it's been, in my mind, a very frustrating process. And I know some of our parents are feeling very frustrated. What we thought would take, a close to 6-week process has now turned into several months. It has to do with the materials. We were supposed to have them before the holiday break, and that was winter holiday. Then we had the call saying, no, you can't have them. And, of course, you see it with Summit County Health Department. I mean, we can't get contractors. And then in the middle, the Utah procurement changed. And so we had to go out and do RFPs for all of it again. It's been a very, very difficult process. So how does that relate to security guards? It would be, a possible stopgap measure until our front offices are finished. I certainly, my professional opinion is not to have armed guards. But I think that there could be a benefit to having the presence, being at the front entryway, checking IDs, just as a measure of security.
Could you do that with just parent volunteers then?
You know, I certainly don't want to offend any of our parent volunteers, because we have some that are very consistent, but we have others that aren't. And to be able to rely upon parents, I think, would be unfair in this situation.
So that means that we've got to pay for it.
We do. So we have, it's interesting, we reached out to our state contract, and we have two different firms that offer that service, and we've received estimates back, and those will be provided to the board. The board would have to approve those amounts for, again, a stopgap measure until our front offices are complete.
What are educators statewide doing to convince the legislature to do more to put in place reasonable gun laws?
Yep, and I think that's a huge topic and something that we all need to really consider. I've shared this idea, but there is a lot of movement around stricter background checks, gun laws, and you see that both at the UEA, and we're fortunate to have Heidi Matthews at the head of that. But also, I'm going to say the superintendents' associations, the school boards, I know will be getting some recommendations from the federal level as well. So there is pressure right now on the legislatures.
All right, let's get a quick update on the superintendent search. Any further details and how many applications we have or anything like that?
You know, I've been very supportive in the board moving forward and helping them gather information, but I am certainly not privy to any of that information.
Okay, so we don't know if there's any internal candidates here or not.
No, and I haven't heard any movement there.
Okay, and then real quick with regard to the budget talks, we're still talking, I think, a 3% increase in the WPU. Does that take off the pressure for the need to raise taxes to cover the salary increases?
Not really. What we're looking at is that we knew that we were dipping into our reserves this last year to be able to pay our professionals what they deserve. And so we really will be having to look at the amount of the tax increase that the board will have to go to, do truth and taxation for.
Okay. And then in terms of the maintenance and operation discussion, anything that we should know about that?
You know, I would say there's one really big ticket item if you look closely, and that's the start times discussion. And so we've continued to move and gather information. If you remember, there's an active motion on the floor that there's implementation for 2018-19. And we've done the background as far as what are the pros and cons at each building. We've worked with the transportation consultant as well as moving from a 3-bell system to a 2-bell system and the costs associated with that. I would say that the biggest challenge and obstacle is our road coming in and going out on Kearns and out at Kilby. We've continued to work with our city and our county partners who have been tremendous. But right now, we don't have those solutions in place. We're getting closer, I think, but we don't have those in place. So if you look on the budget documents and the information, there's about a $600,000 price tag that would require maintenance and operation to move to a 2-bell system. So that's moving from 3 bell to 2 bell. The other thing that is there's a capital expense outside of the $600,000 that would be ongoing, close to $1 million, and that would be to outfit our transportation department for more buses, and of course to purchase more buses. I think one of the difficulties we have, of course, is hiring our bus drivers. And if we go to a 2 bell, interesting enough, they would lose hours rather than gain hours the way that it works. And we are very aware that we could possibly then lose more bus drivers and be in a worse situation than we already in.
Yeah, so that $600,000 was for the salary then?
It would be. Mm-hmm. It would be for the additional bus drivers. Yeah.
And then also the concern, I think you kind of referenced it, but that being we would be bringing students in on buses during the busiest commute times of the day.
Right. And I think, you know, you look at our excellent education that we provide, and I think one of those reasons, not one of, a very, very important reason is that our teachers teach bell to bell, and being able to have consistent delivery of our students is very important.
Okay. Amber, I need to leave there unless you had something else you wanted to mention.
Just remember that it's Read Across America on March 2nd. We're asking volunteers to come in, and also that the school board districts 1, 4, and 5 are going to be opening up, and that there's filing on March 9th through the 15th.
Okay. Amber Conley, superintendent of Park City Schools. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's turn the mic now to Tom Kelly, who has just returned from Pyeongchang, South Korea, with the 2018 Winter Olympics. And tell me about the pink beard.
I have a pink beard. Well, it's good to be back. It's actually really good to come back into town yesterday, albeit without a voice, but to see snow on the ground, and looking forward to skiing a little bit. I actually did ski one day in Pyeongchang. We had a great experience. So the purple beard, this is a bet that goes back to 1999 when I bet one of our athletes on the snowboard team, if you ever get an Olympic medal, and I will dye my hair pink. And Rosie Fletcher got that medal in 06, and I did it, and I did it again when Shannon Barkey medaled in 2010. So I had this outstanding bet with Keegan Randall, who is noted for the pink streaking in her hair. And when she medaled last Wednesday, we talked about it, and we decided that on Saturday we would go to the Athlete Village Salon and did my beard. So this is not coming out, folks, and I'm not planning to shave it right now. So if you see me on the street, that's what it's about.
All right. Well, I think that was probably my favorite story of the Olympics, watching that race with Keegan Randall and Jesse Diggins.
Yeah, we'll work our way up to that. I want to talk about that, but that's the highlight. So.
All right. Well, real quick, just the overall, I mean, you say a highly successful. For those of us at home here, we're going, God, there's nobody there.
Well, you know, I think this is one of the tough things with Olympics. Empty seats are kind of go with the territory. And to a certain degree, I think the Olympics are a little bit over-organized. We had a much different situation here in Park City. We had full stands. And it's not unusually the same thing in Sochi, to a certain degree, or the same thing in Vancouver. So there were a lot of empty seats. But I got to tell you, the venues were really world-class. These were tough venues. Every venue, particularly when you get into the action sports, the slopestyle courses, the big air, half pipes, they were really, really amazing venues. So everybody had great competition playing fields. We did well. We ended up with 16 medals being awarded to our athletes, including 8 gold. So very, very good. Obviously, you know, you can make a lot of case that we would have liked to have had more. But one of the things that really struck us across our entire team is how competitive every team was. You know, a good example of that in cross country, you know, we're going to talk about Jessie Diggins winning the gold medal, but she competed in 6 events and she was never higher than 7th. She was 7th in the 30K yesterday. We saw the same thing across all other venues, that our athletes were in there competing, and they were in there competing to win medals, and probably at a higher level and a deeper level than we've ever been before. To come away with what we did against the fields that we were competing against, we're pretty happy with. And you know, one of the things too, we have always been a strong team on the women's side, and that really shone through. 5 of the 8 medals we won were won by women, and great repeat medals by Michaela Schifrin and Jamie Anderson, which is hard to do.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the big moments of the games. Of course, kicking it off right with Red Girard and his snowboarding.
Yeah, you know, we got into this thing back in Sochi in 2014 with a slopestyle that opening weekend. It was Josh Christensen and Sage Kotzenberg winning back then. Jamie Anderson and Sage Kotzenberg. But this time around, as a young Red Gerard, you know, we knew that he was going to be tough, didn't know what he really could do at 17 years old, but he stole a show, picked up a gold medal, then came back and became a famous American television celebrity for a week. Jamie Anderson picking up a repeat gold, very, very hard to do. So we got that one down, and just a great opening weekend. And that just led us right into the halfpipe competitions. Chloe Kim had been favored, and she came out that day and just completely dominated the competition right from the very first jump. You know, I characterized that day with Chloe Kim in the halfpipe. It was just overall, it was a joyous day. It was just happy from the start. Ariel Gold picking up third and taking the bronze medal. Kelly Clark just missing and finishing fourth. But then we came back the next day with Sean White, and that was just out-and-out warfare. It was a battle right from the start. The lead was going back and forth, and ultimately came down to that quintessential final run where Sean just had to have it, and he got it, and he just went big and took every risk in the world and was able to really showcase what he could do. 4 years ago in Sochi, they had weather on that day, and he wasn't able to do what he does so well. But, boy, we saw Sean White at his finest. When you think about it, he's won 3 Olympic gold medals, and it spans 12 years in a sport that is as punishing as halfpipe. And it's a real credit to him. And I think, you know, of all the stars that we dealt with at the Games, he became one of my favorites. That meant a lot to him. And those tears you saw in the finish, those were real.
Yeah. Halfpipe skiing. I didn't think this was going to happen. David Wise, I mean, didn't pull it out until the third and final run.
Yeah, another out-and-out warfare battle, and he had to come through with that last one. And, you know, he was having somewhat of a similar situation that Maddie Bowman had in the women's event the day before, 2 days before. Maddie just, you know, great technical run, but she was just running out of territory. She just didn't have enough pipe left to do it. And David having similar problems. And so he went into that third run. He had to have a big run. He cranked his bindings to 18. I learned that yesterday. And he said, I'm not losing a ski on this one. I am going to really go big. And he did, and he won the gold medal, and that's what it takes.
Yeah, we saw that on TV, those using the big screwdriver, cranking those down after he'd lost his ski the first two runs. Yeah.
And, you know, it could have been a sweep there. Alex Ferreira finishing with the silver, and Britta Sigourney had taken a medal on the women's side when Maddie couldn't quite come through. So, you know, pretty successful there. But, boy, David Wise to come back again and win a second gold, that's tough.
Yeah. And then big air snowboarding, also a couple medals there.
Yeah, you know, we'd really wanted to get some gold there, but silver in each. Jamie Anderson, who'd been the favorite going in, picking up silver there to kick it off for the women. And then the men's was really wide open shootout. We thought Chris Corning would be the favorite there, maybe Red Gerard. And Kyle Mack kind of came through as a dark horse. He's a young guy from the state of Michigan, lives in Silverthorne, Colorado right now. And, boy, it was just a joyous thing to watch him win and that silver medal. And, you know, the scoring in big air, it's a little bit different than halfpipe. It takes two of your best three, or your two best out of three. So you can't really afford to have much of a bad run. You've got to be putting it down each time. And Kyle Mack came in, and, you know, there were a couple of really bigger names who just didn't put it through. Max Perot of Canada being an example there, but good for those guys.
Okay. And then Lindsey Vonn and Michaela Schifrin, I mean, they came home with medals, but I don't think to the extent that, I don't know, maybe just the public put on them. It's like they were supposed to win it all.
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting when you have expectations. And I think, first of all, with Michaela, she picked up a gold in the GS, which is one she wasn't expected to win. She didn't perform as good as anticipated in the slalom, and she did not defend her title. I think one of the things that really happened with her is in that first week when things were getting moved around on the schedule, it just kind of, things lost their focus. And I was out there for the day of her slalom, and she just wasn't sharp as she usually is. GS day, man, she was right on it. And, you know, she skied extremely well in the combined, but she just ran into a situation where there were some there was somebody that was better than her on that day. So I think gold and silver for her, she's really happy with that. Might not have been the expectation. I think people thought she's going to walk away with 3 gold, but pretty hard thing to do. And, you know, with Lindsey, I think all of America saw the interview with her, and she had America crying, and those of us who were standing with her for that interview were in tears as well. She genuinely was so thrilled with the medal. And I think, again, people had the expectation she's going to come in and win it. That's a hard thing to do. And the fact that she was able to come back after 8 years away from the Olympics and win a medal, she leaves Pyeongchang very, very happy. And now she has her sights set again on winning 5 more World Cups to beat that Denmark record.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for bringing me some Olympic pins. I appreciate that. What was the green jello of the South Korean Games?
You know, it was hard because people are asking me, you know, like somebody wanted to bring a shot glass back and things like that. This is a different market, and the games were just marketed differently than I think here. And there's a lot of the standard souvenir fare that we really didn't see. You know, for me, my biggest souvenir is coming back with the pink beard. And people ask me a lot, you've been in 10 Olympics, what's your favorite moment? And I've had mine over the years. It's Peekaboo, it's Tommy Moe, it's all those. But being there last Wednesday when Keegan Randall and Jesse Diggins won that gold medal, and, you know, standing literally 5 feet from the finish line to watch Jesse beat out Stina Nelson, no one will ever top that moment for me. And I think in our sport, that was the story of the games, and hats off to them. And for Keegan Randall to end her career with a gold medal is very fitting for what that team has done over the last decade.
Okay. Hey, Tom, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for your time this morning.